What is it? It's
May
Monday. 11th. Monday, May 8th.
11th. 11th.
11th.
Oh,
11th, May.
11th. This is the wrong date here. Let me start again. Welcome to the House Rules Committee for Monday, May 11th. Wanted to see if you were all paying attention, and I'm glad that you are. So with that, I want to announce that House Bill 2995 will be held over till May 13th. That would be Wednesday. House Bill 3300 will also be held over till May 13th. Do I have to gavel?
Nope.
There's no gavel needed there. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing and... No, because I have members here. So I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3314. Erin, will you describe the measure? And Representative Comp, why don't you come up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3314 establishes Joint Legislative Committee on Beacon Provisions Review to monitor, investigate, and evaluate effectiveness of major laws, sets forth a selection process for identifying laws to be studied and subject matter scheduled for review, directs committee to introduce bills to impose beacon provisions that establish review period, utilizing repeal mechanism to facilitate review being completed within fixed time, requires committee to monitor, investigate, and evaluate implementation of such laws for at least 4-year period, but no more than 10-year period, authorizes committee to introduce legislation to address findings from committee's investigation. You have a dash-3 amendment. The dash-3 amendment replaces the underlying measure and sets forth legislative findings regarding role of legislative assembly in public policy creation, implementation, and oversight. It establishes the Joint Committee on Strategic Public Policy Review, composed of the Senate President, Speaker of the House, and members appointed by the President and Speaker. It specifies terms of service for the members and their compensation. Directs legislative administrator to provide support to committee. Specifies committee's public policy review process. Directs committee to select between 2 and 4 eligible policies for review and specified identified policy areas 90 days after sine die of odd-numbered regular session, and prepare measure for introduction during even-numbered year regular session requiring review of selected policies. Committee can require one or a combination of following types of methods of review: establishment of a task force, require policy audit, direct state agency study, direct legislative council to review all administrative rules related to policy, or direct one or more state agencies to follow through on a budget note. It specifies factors to be addressed in review of policy, report to committee. There is an emergency clause on the dash three. There is a no revenue, but there is a fiscal impact statement issued. This measure will need to go to Ways and Means.
Representative Comp.
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle and Rules Committee members. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I serve House District 22. It's North Salem, Jervis, Woodburn. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 3314-3. This bill has undergone dramatic changes since the first part of it, which Erin read about very well, and I thought, oh, I remember that. But we are really looking at the dash threes as the bill to move forward. Oregon's three branches of government have undergone numerous changes since we became a state in 1859. Prior to becoming a state, we had a provisional legislature. On May 2nd, 1843, a 9-member legislative committee was created to draft a code of laws for provisional government. It established a unicameral legislature and was required to meet twice a year in June and December. Since those early days, our state government has undergone numerous additional changes to address the changing needs of our state and our people. As a result, our state has long led the nation on fundamental initiatives that have greatly enhanced Oregon's quality of life. It is time for us to tap into this spirit of innovation once again. Today, with the growing complexity of the challenges and the solutions facing Oregon, it's time for us to once again refine the workings of the state government to help Oregon move into the future. House Bill 3314-3 is a visionary bill. It is designated to return power and strategic planning back to the legislature. It responds to some very fundamental changes in the legislative process. When our state recently changed our constitution to have annual sessions, it had a big impact on our decision-making process, because where we once had time to complete research and develop in-depth legislation biannually, our opportunity for visionary strategic governance has been diminished. A large proportion of the balance of power now resides with the executive branch and agency directors. Now is the time for our legislative body to think boldly and strategically about our future. House Bill 3314-3's intent is to analyze and implement strong legislative statutes. Many of us can relate to the comment that ideas percolate for years, but actions don't move forward. By creating this joint committee, the legislative body can focus on topics, get research to make decisions, and zero in on a vision for the future. The joint committee does not intend to supersede the standing policy committees. In fact, the standing policy committees could be the ultimate arbitrator of any omnibus or long-term policy legislation once finally presented to a legislative body. What this bill represents is the opportunity to level the balance of power between the executive branch, judicial, and legislative branch. When our legislative leaders develop a forward-thinking process and strategic planning, the results will bring about strong transportation plans, best schools in the nation, strong in business success. The list is endless. Most importantly, House Bill 3314-3 continues the long-standing Oregon tradition of innovation to make sure that we can continue to come up with the solutions that our state needs for today, tomorrow, and far into the future. I want to thank the committee. This is a bill that I've been working on for approximately a year and a half. I've been thinking about it and consulting with a lot of people, and if I used Representative Kennemer's statement I did take a quote from somebody's testimony from last week that ideas percolate for years. I think that was Representative Kennemer, but actions don't move forward. So I want to acknowledge his contribution to this thought. And I'm available for questions and thoughts that the committee might have. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? With that, I would accept a motion. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 3314. Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3314. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3314 with a do pass as amended recommendation, and that the measure be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved House Bill 3314 with a do pass as amended recommendation, and the measure be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes, and I will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3314. Thank you so much, Representative Comp, and thank you for your work on this. I know you've put a lot of work into it, and it's really an important issue.
Okay.
With that, we are going to do a quick work session. I know we have a number of people here for HJM 20, and so as soon as we do this work session, then we will be hearing from you. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3483. Erin, would you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3483 adds secular organizations and parties to marriage to list of persons and entities authorized solemnized marriages. We have a Dash 6 amendment. It clarifies the concerns about the definition of secular organization within its organization in the statute. It removes parties to marriage as individuals able to solemnize marriages and adds legislators or former members of the legislature to list of individuals who may solemnize marriages. We have a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the Dash 6 amendment.
Okay. With that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendment to House Bill 3483.
Is there discussion on the amendment? Okay, is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the motion passes. And
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3483 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved House Bill 3483 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be a no today. I just see this as a continued assault on tradition. And so, therefore, I will be a no.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am looking at the sections toward the end, which talks about which basically immunizes the section 4. I'm referring to section ORS 106.1509. I think it will start it as a question. I'm not sure that the list here is complete. I think that the amendment removed the language on line 26, page 3, the or to each other language. If it did not, then of course that needs to be fixed as well. But it fails to immunize marriages that are officiated at by a member or previous member of the legislature. Everything else is listed in here, I think. And if I'm right about that, I'm perfectly happy to vote for the motion, but it would require an amendment in the Senate in order to make sure that these pieces fit together. Now, I may be wrong, and if I am, I'm perfectly happy to be wrong.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, you are correct in that it does strike out the language for marriage to each other, so that the amendment does take care of that. The question about the immunity for legislators, I actually can't answer that question at the moment. We can certainly ask counsel. She did look at that when she redrafted the amendment. If it does need to be there, it's something we could certainly fix in the Senate.
And what I would do is I would say at this point on the record, and we'll ask the carrier, Representative Greenlick, to clarify and signal that it is our intention that legislators be covered, and past legislators, as that was an amendment requested that we all agreed to. So with that caveat.
Right, and if, just to be absolutely clear, if I may, Madam Chair, the point of this, it has to do with, not with immunity of the legislator, but rather the inability of anyone to challenge the marriage based on the way it was solemnized. And that's in this bill in one or more of these sections. And all the everything else seems to be listed in here in one form or another, but I think that part got left out. That's the point I'm making. I think it's a technicality, but it's one that we would hate to find out later that some marriage was being challenged on the basis of who it was that solemnized it. Or who it was that was purporting to be one of those people who was able to solemnize it.
And Representative Barnhart, I would say that since they are now going to be listed under ORS, I think it covers everybody under ORS 160120, which is where they're going to be added to it. So we can clarify that, but I do believe that because they are now listed in that section and that statute does reference coverage of everybody who is listed under that section, that we should be okay, but we will certainly, just to affirm that, ask that question, but I do believe that's correct.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the question. Representative Rayfield.
Just as a point of clarification, at the very beginning it says person, and then it goes on to list everything else, and when it says person, anybody under 106.120, so my reading is that it does include everybody.
Okay, that's very helpful, and thank you both, and appreciate the comments. Any other comments? Okay, with that, I accept a motion.
Should we have a motion?
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Yes, let's have a roll call.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Excused.
Representative Nose?
Aye.
Representative Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
That's it.
Excused.
Vice Chair Smith Warner?
Aye.
Chair Hoyle?
Aye. With that, the motion passes. Representative Greenlick will be the carrier. Close the work session on House Bill 3483. With that, I will open a public hearing and work session on HJM 20. Aaron, will you describe the measure? Representative Boone and Representative Gomberg and Senator Roblin, please all come up, and thank you very much for your patience.
And thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. HJM 20 urges Congress to fund and maintain United States Coast Guard Air Facility at Newport, Oregon in perpetuity. There is no revenue, no fiscal impact on the measure.
Okay, with that, who would like to start?
Well, thank you, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. For your record, I am David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast. Colleagues, we are here today to celebrate the United States Coast Guard. And I say that sincerely because I know and I'm confident that everyone that's going to be coming here to testify for you today has the greatest admiration and respect for our Coast Guard. These are men and women who go into dark and dangerous waters to save strangers, and there is no higher calling. But we believe that somehow, somewhere further up the chain of command, someone has lost sight of the mission and made the decision that saving dollars is more important than saving lives. Now, I say this to you because it was about a year ago at this time we received the startling news with no advanced warning that the Coast Guard was planning to close their air station in Newport. There are three Coast Guard air stations in Oregon, one in Newport, one in North Bend, and one in Astoria. And the Coast Guard indicated that they had done a standardized response study nationwide and determined that that we could receive adequate coverage on the Central Coast by one of those two other stations with 60 days notice. In response to an overwhelming reaction from the community, which included town hall meetings, included petitions with over 18,000 signatures, including lawsuits, including the strong cooperation of our congressional delegation, that decision was first put off for a month and then finally for a year. But one of the reasons we're before you today is that the Coast Guard Appropriations Bill is now working its way through Congress and will include the permanent reinstatement of this air station, thanks to Congressman DeFazio and Congressman Schrader. So this is one of those rare occasions where a resolution, I think, can make an important difference on national decision making. And it's an absolutely critical issue for those of us, not only on the coast, but throughout Oregon, and I'd like to take a moment to tell you why. The Central Oregon Coast is the home to Oregon's largest commercial fleet. Now, they will tell you that the waters off Newport, Oregon are different than the waters off Newport Beach, California, or Newport, Rhode Island. They will tell you that a standardized national response time makes little difference when that time is longer than the average life expectancy of an individual in the water in a survival suit. They will tell you that they have lost loved ones and are concerned that they will lose more. The Central Coast is also home to the largest charter fleet in Oregon. And on any sunny summer afternoon, thousands of people will go out into the water in small boats. Most of those will be your constituents, not mine. And should they find themselves in trouble, they will not have training in how to use survival suits and how to activate location beacons. And they will find themselves in the water where in between 15 and 20 minutes, they will not even have the ability to raise their arm for help. The Central Coast, of course, is also one of the most popular destinations in Oregon. And of all the visitors that come to us every year, some people find themselves in trouble. They find themselves in riptides, in sneaker waves, or stranded on the rocks with the tide coming in. I have never seen one of them in a survival suit, colleagues. And you will hear testimony today that on an increasing basis that we're using the Coast Guard to pull those people off the rocks or out of the water when they are in trouble, and they don't have much time to do so. The appearance here today of many of our first responders is strong and critical evidence that they have great concern, not only for the safety of the people in the water, but also for the safety and security of their own staff, their own paid staff, their own volunteer staff, who are going to be asked to go to make a decision whether or not to go into the water and effect a rescue without the Coast Guard behind them. Very critical. And you may also hear testimony from the forest industry, because we're seeing increasing cases where the Coast Guard is being asked to pull injured workers out of the woods. So the Coast Guard is critically important on a number of fronts. The final point I want to leave you with, of the three air stations that we have here in Oregon, only one of them, the one in Newport, is outside the tsunami inundation zone. And when, not if, but when a major seismic event strikes us here, we're going to need that equipment and need their support in the desperate minutes and hours and days after that event when we're effectively cut off. So, colleagues, I bring this measure to you today because we regard it as quite literally a matter of life and death, not only to my constituents on the Central Coast, but to your constituents as well who visit the Central Coast. There's a window of opportunity for us to say something meaningful to the United States Congress and to move this measure forward. So I'm very pleased to present it to you today. I'm very pleased with so many of the people that came out from the Central Coast to share their ideas with you, and I would appreciate your positive consideration. Thank you all.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I'll try to bring a little different perspective to this. Representative Gomberg gave a great overview and lead-in, and I wanted to point out a couple of things. He failed to mention that Astoria and Newport are both Coast Guard cities, and we have our Coast Guard communities we are very proud of. They're part of our communities. They're part of our daily lives, and I just wanted to bring a couple flesh out a little bit of what Representative Gomberg said when he said it's not all about the ocean. It is a lot about the ocean, but it's also a lot about other things that our constituents, mine and yours, do when they come to the rural areas, to the coast. In our area, our volunteer fire departments are often answering calls in the woods. Our constituents work in the woods, and if you've got an injured logger, you're talking about a half hour to 45 minutes in some cases to get to them and fly them out. It would take almost an hour for some of the equipment and vehicles to get to the scene. And in some cases, it's very difficult. You have to literally drop survey flags to mark the roads and on the way in. And if you can imagine how long that's going to take. And that also starts with gathering the troops when the call goes out. Who's in town? Who's near the spot where they're going to be rescuing somebody? And then there's getting into the actual place. And in many, many cases, it's just not reasonable to try to bring them out in a vehicle, but it's just so much quicker to fly them out. And, you know, Life Flight can't do that in all cases. So what we just had a call at our volunteer fire department on Saddle Mountain this last weekend, a 24-year-old woman in great shape and everything, but didn't have water. It was very warm, and she had some sort of event going on. A paramedic happened to be hiking down. She was lucky it was up the top. He was further up than she was. Otherwise, she would not have been found by dark. It turned out what happened next, I wasn't at liberty to just do hearsay, but it turned out that she was in very serious condition and had very little time to get to medical care. So they decided to call out the Coast Guard, who came and got her. And this is just before dusk. So that's where they shine. They come in, they fly in, they drop us. Well, we call them a swimmer, but they're, you know, they drop the scoop and put them on, and then they take them out. And this was a case of having to hike in 3 miles uphill. It's a very steep climb to get her down. If the fire department had to take her down on the wheel, which is a wheelbarrow with a wheel and literally handles on both ends, very steep and some unsure traversing. Plus, somebody who, if she wasn't in that kind of condition, hers was a different kind of situation, but an injury, how difficult that is to move an injured person, especially when you don't know how serious the injury is, especially a neck or spinal cord injury. So the Coast Guard has just been integral in saving lives, and that's one of the lines in here that gives you the numbers of how many lives have been saved and then how many lives have been addressed. So that's just one other perspective from that. And I want you all to notice that it's also a Coastal Caucus bill. The whole Coastal Caucus has signed on to this. And as Representative Gomberg said, and I'm sure Senator Roblin will say, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, this is just a message to Congress, this is what we'd like you to do. But it's a big voice. That's the Coastal Caucus speaking and all of us in the legislature speaking. And on behalf of all of you know, congressional potential, you know, people from New York come out here too. And you mentioned people not knowing what to do in, you know, in the ocean and where they're staying, how to get out of harm's way. But if they do need help, they call 911, and that 911 call often ends up at the Coast Guard station. So I think you can understand why I support this, and I hope you do too. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Senator Arnie Roblin, District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook and over into Sheridan and Falls City in the Valley. The illustrious Rules Committee and the illustrious Chairman. I remember being in this room, and it's one of my favorite built rooms in the whole building. You know, for me, the most important thing to talk about is the community and how everybody came behind getting the Coast Guard back. We got the calls, as all of us had, about the pullout, and we started trying to figure out what can we do about it. And a number of us, including the county commissioners, fishermen's wives, who you'll hear from later today, surf rider, all of the people answered the call, and it was a community event. It was actually a coastal event. Senator Schrader came over to the meetings that we called. Originally, the Coast Guard wasn't going to really send anybody except the local people who we knew weren't the issue. But they finally bent to all of that pressure and sent people who could actually make a decision. And they came and took testimony in a big meeting in Newport. Eventually, with Senator Schrader, with Representative Schrader and Representative DeFazio, and all of our delegation actually getting behind it, we see it moving forward in Congress. We need to keep the pressure on. There are a lot of people here who are going to testify to the importance for their individual industries and their individual families and so on. Having had a number of students who went into the fishing industry, some of whom did not survive their time at sea, having enough rescue people on the coast, and I go back to that failing the mission. The Coast Guard mission has changed. They've gotten into homeland security more than they have into the safety event, and we need to pull that back. They need to recognize it will not only in the bill, it's not only the Newport area, it was also a South Carolina station that was going to be pulled. And let me tell you the difference between South Carolina and here. Our water is colder, a lot colder. You can survive a lot longer. You see these wonderful rescues of people out in the ocean on the East Coast for weeks and stuff. You know, they don't get cold enough necessarily to die. One of the things that people don't understand about the coast is because of upwelling, our coldest water is in the summer. So when the kids are at the beach, that water is as cold as it is or colder than it is in the winter. People that fall in and go thinking it's a wonderful place, you go windsurfing, you go do other kinds of stuff, you get in that water very long, you're in real trouble if you can't get out of it. And that means that the ability to get there quickly is really important. And an extra hour from North Bend, an extra hour from Astoria to get to this place just doesn't make any sense at all. And you'll hear the efforts that were made by the fishermen's wives, by other people in the community to make sure this happened was overwhelming. And it's easy for us to come bring you a bill. I will tell you, when your loved ones are at risk because of decisions made on high, it motivates people. And it was amazing to watch the people come together in Newport around this issue, and people who came in that no one really even understood. Most people didn't really realize how much the loggers needed this activity as well until they come to the hearing and start hearing people talk about that. So I encourage you to vote for this bill. I thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. And you're going to be impressed when you hear the local people that have come, because this is one of those things where grassroots won. And we hope it continues to win. But it did so on the backs of a whole lot of people you see in this room who made the effort and were willing to express themselves clearly and articulately to the people who are making the decision. So I thank you for the opportunity to be here. And we'll answer any questions.
Any questions, comments? Thank you very much. My mother's family are all commercial fishermen and off the coast of Ireland, where when it's the weather cold. Gets bad and it gets cold, it is life and death. I know how important this is.
One last thing because of that. They always talk about the deadliest catch in the other big TV show. If you go look at the statistics, the deadliest catch is off the the crabbing off the Oregon coast, because they go out in the worst weather.
Absolutely.
We've set up things that make it really hard. They're not in as big a ships, as boats, as they are in Alaska. These people put their lives at risk to bring you quality seafood. So.
That's right. Thank you so much. And with that, I would like to call up, and we're going to get through as many people as we can. We've got a lot of people signed up to testify, but Jennifer Shock Stevenson, Ginny Gub, and if I mistake your name, please correct me, Gublish, and Walter Chuck. Fantastic. Come on up.
A couple minutes each, because the
Of course. We know that you've
already covered a lot of ground.
And you've come a long way, and we really, really do appreciate you coming here. Sorry about the chairs.
I'm Jennifer Shock Stevenson, president of Newport Fishermen's Wives, and I would like to thank the Coastal Caucus, sponsors of the HJM 20, and this committee for hearing our testimony. Newport Fishermen's Wives has had the honor of leading our community and kind of safeguarding the helicopter placement originally, fighting for it, and to continue to keep it to serve our maritime fishermen, along with recreational and our community visitors, which comes from every corner of our state, often unaware of the dangers involved with being along the ocean, and just here to kind of witness its splendor, but often not aware of its dangers. Newport Fishermen's Wives, of course, we had the opportunity to go back to DC and to send our message directly to the U.S. Coast Guard and our delegation back there, but we applaud you guys for sending this resolution as well of support. The Coast Guard gave us quite short notice, which left us very stymied on what our options were last year when they announced that the closure of the Coast Guard station in Newport and called it redundant. We very much adamantly disagreed with that and were unwilling to accept its hour and a half response time that they felt was acceptable in our cold waters. I'm a fisherman's daughter. I'm also a fisherman's wife. And when you have loved ones in the ocean, that is not something that we're willing to accept. This is their job, and they do accept the dangers that are involved in it. But I also feel that we've fought very hard to get these safety measures in place. And our fleet has done a remarkable job in equipping itself from survival suits to rafts, that we need to continue in the same way of safety. So our community, of course, was very involved with petitions, sending that their individual voices from our community back to the delegation and the commandant who made the decision, along with letters of support. The removal of the two helicopters in Newport would put the entire Southern Washington and Northern California in jeopardy, really asking too much of those helicopters to patrol in our cold waters. And I will let Ginny touch on the cold water issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Ginny Goblers. I'm on the board of Newport Fishermen's Wives and part of a fishing family. I retired after close to 30 years with Oregon Sea Grant. And in that position, I worked extensively with commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, and the maritime community, principally in areas of sea safety and survival and cold water issues. And so after I retired, I went deep underground into my hole. I didn't have to answer the phone anymore. Until we got notice of this closure, I was involved in the initial effort to get the helicopter here many 30 years ago. And so when they made this announcement, in the way they made the announcement, with no discussion, no inkling, weeks before the opening of our most dangerous fishery, Dungeness crab season, was quite frankly insulting to the community and to the entire state. To this day, they still The powers that be in Washington, D.C. will not speak to us. They have not spoken to us once. We've frequently asked to just be able to sit down and talk about this. But I don't understand. They gave us the reasons that it was budget. I have to say, they never asked for any money for search and rescue and extra money for search and rescue in their budget. They asked for super cutters for Homeland Security, for border control, border and immigration and drug running. And I think that the safety of our American citizens should come before foreign operations. That's my personal opinion, and I believe the community has spoken. We're drawing a line in the sand. You're going too far with this, if it's a choice between that and our helicopter. The Coast Guard never referenced the public. They referenced the commercial fishermen who have come a long way with their safety background and have improved the safety record. But the public has just gotten worse and worse and worse because more and more people are coming to the coast. Some of them don't even know what a tide is. And you read the newspaper, you see these people, they get trapped on the rocks and that kind of thing. The Coast Guard knows about cold water. They know what the ramifications of cold water are to somebody in the water without additional protection. In the late 1980s and early 1990s, a whole new wealth of information about cold water survival became known. And that was that everything is time, it's time, temperature, and geography. Time in the water, the temperature, and the kinds of ocean conditions. And the longer in the water, the more likely you're going to die. And there are temperatures associated with that. The bottom line is everybody that works on the ocean in Oregon knows this already. But if you're in the water for more than 10 minutes, you quickly lose your ability to help yourself. You will not die of hypothermia unless you're there for a couple hours. You will die of drowning because you can no longer help yourself. You can drown in a survival suit. You can drown in a life jacket, just the waves hitting you in the face. So the recommendations were that people need to be out of the water well under 45 minutes and under a half an hour if at all possible. It's physically impossible to get a helicopter here to the Central Coast from either North Bend or Astoria. Now, in 93, the Chief of Waterways with the Coast Guard recommended that the Coast Guard go through their national standard and upgrade it, update it. And their standard speaks to where assets are placed. Commandants since then have always said, no, it's fine the way it is. When the Coast Guard used that as an excuse to shut down coverage on the Central Oregon coast, Newport Fishermen's Wives and the rest of the community felt strongly that not only do we need to fight for keeping that coverage, but we need to see that that standard is updated so we don't go through this again. So part of what we're doing is saying, Coast Guard, we know you want to save money and you don't want to be told where to put assets, but in the cold water regions of this country, which is the Pacific Northwest and Alaska, you do need extra basic assets, where other areas, you don't need them as much. It's not 2 hours equally around the country. So that's really important. And I feel that the public, it was astounding to all of us to see how much the public responded to this. And they're still asking about it. It looks like we may get a 2-year reprieve if DeFazio's language goes through Congress and needs appropriations, and that's all good. But in 2 years, we're gonna have to go through this again with a Coast Guard Coast Guard authorization bill. So that's why I'm sort of giving everybody a heads up about cold water and the Coast Guard standard, because we'll probably be back even if everything looks great, because that standard needs to change to protect Oregonians.
Thank you very much. And just identify yourself for the record, please.
I am Becky Wagner. I've been with Newport Fishermen Wives for about 13 years now. I just want to bring up the point that, you know, we all know that when you're on land, you've got a three-digit number you can call for help, 911. We don't. Out on the ocean, you have the Coast Guard. You don't have ambulance. You don't have fire. You don't have police. They're the only ones that can save if there's someone having a stroke, heart attack, if they get their arm caught in a line wire. And they also bring out pumps for if a boat's going down. And the boat can go down within seconds, minutes, fast. We just had one of our members lose their boat in the last month. All they were doing was bringing up one of the doors, and the boat flipped down. Luckily, there was another fishing boat real close. They grabbed the men off out of the water, put them on a boat, transferred to another boat, and they all made it off safely. As Newport Fishermen Wives, we're one of the first ones that gets a call if a boat tragedy happens. We're also the only organization that writes checks to help these families. We are so involved with all of these families that have issues on the water. And it's just heartbreaking to know that we would have many more if the Coast Guard helicopter was over an hour away. They wouldn't be able to get the people off the rocks. They wouldn't be able to save the boats. The people would drown. It's just heartbreaking, and it's very personal for all of us. All of us wives have dealt with loss at sea. And we just thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, and thank you for coming to share your experience and for doing what you do. And with that, any questions, comments for this panel? No. Okay. With that, Walter Chuck, how about this? Joshua Williams, Don Baker, and Rob Murphy. And why don't you go next? I think these three people are coming up, and the chairs are a little bit shaky. And then try and focus your testimony on things we haven't heard already. So that we can get everybody in. And thank you again for coming all the way out here. Who would like to go first?
I will.
There you go.
My name is Joshua Williams, and I'm the fire chief for Depot Bay. And I'm here to support the actions by this body to support House Joint Memorial No. 20. As a member of the emergency services community, I see firsthand the devastation that can occur when tragedy strikes. As emergency personnel, we strive to position ourselves and our equipment between the public and their emergency. As you know, the Oregon coast is one of the most beautiful places on earth. There are tens of thousands of visitors each day, from whale watching in Depot Bay, fishing in Newport, and storm watching in Astoria. We live in a glorious place. But in all its glory, there is still danger. The waters of the coast are cold, the currents are unpredictable, and the sneaker waves never announce their arrival. More importantly, people are human. They put themselves in compromising positions on a daily basis. I am here specifically to talk about the impact of the United States Coast Guard helicopter as it relates to local emergency responders. On October 2, 2014, we were notified of the closure of the United States Coast Guard. We knew this would be devastating. We know how dangerous the ocean can be, and we knew that waiting nearly an hour was not acceptable. Nearly a week later, the Depot Bay Fire and Rescue was called to report of six people stuck and stranded on a rock in Fogarty Creek State Park. I responded to the incident, and the first decision made was to get the helicopter in the air. There was an incoming tide, and the waves were high, and they were frequent. We realized that two people had jumped off the rock prior to arrival and nearly drowned. 15 minutes after my request, the helicopter was on scene and rescued each person with precision, and it placed them on the beach to waiting fire personnel. This is all the proof any reasonable person needs to understand the importance of the helicopter. Most recently, in late April, Depot Bay Fire and Rescue responded to a person who had fallen 40 feet down a cliff and on a rock. This was not a surf rescue. It was not a vessel in distress. It was a medical issue on the coastline. National standards are not at play in this situation. We were on that rescue for nearly 3 hours due to the location and the complexity of the rescue. This person on the beach was stranded with an incoming tide while my firefighters were there rendering aid. The United States Coast Guard was called to assist with the rescue and did so with the utmost precision. Once the victim was rescued, my attention turned to the firefighters on the beach. As I mentioned before, there was an incoming tide. I was worried that if we did not leave the scene fast enough, we may be the ones that needed to be rescued. However, I had learned that the helicopter used on our rescue was damaged during that particular rescue. So the closest helicopter would have been over an hour away to rescue my personnel. There must have been angst in my voice after I had completed the rescue. I had received a call from the United States Coast Guard in North Bend. They too were monitoring the rescue and were growing concerned for the emergency responders. When making budgetary decisions as a fire chief, I distinguished the needs versus wants within our communities. The helicopter is a need. I equate this decision to move the helicopter as a fire chief closing a fire station in the busiest part of town, especially when numbers do not justify the closure. I would ask the state of Oregon to continue fighting for the residents and visitors of the Oregon coast, fight for what is right and for what is needed, and please urge the Congress to support keeping the Newport Air Station open in perpetuity. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rob Murphy. I'm the fire chief for Newport Fire Department and Newport Rural Fire Protection District. Take a little bit different tack. In Newport, I have seen numerous calls. I've been on numerous calls, and I know the other chiefs here have as well, where we have specifically seen the Coast Guard helicopter rescue people in situations where either it's just simply too dangerous for us or it's much safer for them to do it than for us to do it. I can recall specifically at the end of the jetties where the boulders they use to make the jetties become very large, and to traverse over them by foot is extremely dangerous for us. And while we do go out there, when people unwisely go out there and get hurt, we go out there at the risk to ourselves and we help package the patient. But once we package them, to get them back by foot is even more dangerous because we have to put them in a Stokes basket and literally hand by hand move them out. It is much safer, much more efficient, and much better for the patients to do it by helicopter. Also, there is a intertidal zone where we can only go out so far from the beach, and the Coast Guard motor lifeboats can only go in so far close to the ocean. There's an area in between where when people need rescue, literally the only people that can do it are the Coast Guard helicopter. So again, it's another, as Chief Williams said, it's a need, not a want for us. We all know, all of us responders know, that if that Coast Guard helicopter goes, it will cost lives. It's not a matter of if it will happen. We know it will happen because we've seen them save lives. And then the last quick point I want to make was you've heard a lot of references to this town hall meeting that all three of us were at and testified to that the representatives and the senator talked about. What amazed me about that is I saw representatives from just about every walk of life, every interest, people who normally would never sit in a room together and agree on something, who every single one of them to a T said to the Coast Guard, basically, what are you thinking? It's just so obvious to us on the coast how much that we need them. And so, anyways, I do thank you for your support and for this resolution memorial that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Donald Baker. I'm the fire chief for North Lincoln Fire and Rescue in Lincoln City, Oregon. Unlike my two colleagues to the right of me, we do operate a water rescue team with surf swimmers. We operate using personal motorized watercrafts. Our agency has been involved in this activity since the early 80s. So I will take, again, a little different perspective. One, it should be noted that fire districts, cities, are not compelled by law to provide these services in their community. Look at the patch on the side of my shoulder. It's my agency patch. You'll find centered in that is a personal watercraft. We recognize and our community recognizes the value of the services and the threat that the water opposes or proposes to those that recreate in it and work in it. The U.S. Coast Guard has been a team member that we cannot lose, and specifically the Hilo is a part of that team that we cannot lose. The reason we've been successful is because of the teamwork. Teamwork with our neighbors to the north and south of us, and the teamwork with the U.S. Coast Guard. If you would observe a rescue taking place in the Siletz Bay, which is one of our jurisdiction's most busiest area, the Coast Guard boats are 45 minutes away. The first resource that the Coast Guard is able to deploy on there is that helicopter within about 15 or 20 minutes. Ironically, about the same time we can deploy and put swimmers in the water. Every time we put a rescuer in harm's way, we have to ask the question, is it worth risking my swimmer's life to save a life? What are our chances of success? And best practice operations and our OSHA would say you need to have a rapid intervention team. That is a set of swimmers ready to be deployed to rescue your rescuers, because the ocean is treacherous, things go wrong out there, equipment fails, and things you do not expect happen. That Hilo is many times the first line resource we have to serve as our rapid intervention team for the rescuers we're going to deploy. So the message is here, remove the resource, change its timeline, and you change what we can do on the ground. You change the ability of that. I do not believe the U.S. Coast Guard considered this when they looked at their model, when they looked at closing that station. They looked internally. They looked at their own resources. They looked at their own arsenal of tools and equipment and personnel they had and how they interact together. Never did they come to us and say, how will this affect what you are doing? I can tell you, if the men and women of the Coast Guard that are on the water and on the ground in Lincoln County could come here and testify, they would tell you, we recognize this. If you saw a rescue take place there, you would not know who was on which part of the team, other than you know the ones that come out of the helicopter are with the Coast Guards. It is a relationship that is symbiotic that needs to be kept in place or impact, or it will impact and have a ripple effect throughout all the rescue efforts that are taking place along the coast. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this important matter.
Thank you so much. Any questions or comments for this panel? Thank you for coming here today and for your great work. With that, now, Walter Chuck, Doug Hunt and Charlie Plyben. Whoever wants to start should start.
All right. Thank you, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. My name is Doug Hunt. I'm chair of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners, and I'm here to speak in support of House Joint Memorial 20. You've heard a lot of comments from a variety of people today, and I'll just emphasize a couple of points. Number one, when the Coast Guard first made their announcement to close this air facility, it was a surprise to all of us. And I think you've heard how quickly and how dramatically almost every organization within the county, virtually anybody that was aware of the action of the Coast Guard, got involved. Excuse me. The Fishermen's Wives, the Port of Newport, the Port of Toledo, City of Newport, we as county commissioners. There were resolutions and letters passed by other boards of commissioners along the county and throughout the state in support of that facility. AOC has taken a position in support of maintaining this facility. You've also heard about the all-too-frequent emergencies where the Coast Guard was required to provide rescue support. I happened to drive by the Depot Bay Rescue where there were tourists stranded on the rocks on my way north and watched how effective that was. And I can assure you that had the Coast Guard not been able to provide those rescue services, lives would have been lost. But it's easy for me to sit here as a commissioner and talk about the value to the county and to our citizens. But I think you've also heard about the value that goes beyond just the county. The commercial fishing fleet provides food that is not only prized regionally, but domestically and internationally. You've heard about sport fishing, tourists that come from all over the country, some from outside of our country, to fish and provide economic support to our county. You've heard about tourism in general. Tourists come down, spend time on the beach, and get caught. In addition to that, I don't think it's been mentioned, but search and rescue, that's a critical part of some of the Coast Guard services. So it's not just water. And then I think as you look forward, Newport area is a growing area for marine activity, marine research. OSU is planning to build a campus. There's a wave energy research facility that's been sited off of Newport. OMSI is building a marine studies camp. So as you look into the future, there's going to continue to be people coming to the coast for tourism purposes, for educational purposes, which is going to create a greater demand for these services. And finally, one thing, I'm kind of a visual guy, and so I have had the opportunity to swim in the Atlantic Ocean, and I've had the opportunity to swim in the Pacific Ocean. And my dad's family grew up in Connecticut. And if you think about Connecticut, it's kind of far north on the East Coast. You can go swim in the ocean off of Connecticut. It's a little cold, but you can swim and you can enjoy yourself. You can't do that here off of the Oregon coast. So you look at the East Coast and the Atlantic Ocean, you say, swimming in the ocean. Okay, you can't swim, as I've said, in the Pacific Ocean. And I think that goes to the heart of the two-hour standard response time. That might work in San Diego. It might even work on the East Coast, but it doesn't work along the Oregon coast, and it'll cost lives. So thank you for your time, and I urge your support of House Joint Memorial 20. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle, members of the Rules Committee. My name is Walter Chuck. I'm the president of the Port of Newport Commission, and I thank you for this time to speak. I'm here to speak in support for House Joint Memorial 20. Continued at present of the helicopter is vital to the safety of mariners, recreationists, and visitors to the Oregon coast. Newport is the busiest commercial and recreational port on the Oregon coast. It has the highest landing and one of the largest transient fleets during salmon and tuna seasons. We have boats from California to Alaska, including British Columbia, using our facilities. Newport is also home to one of the last fully functioning waterfronts on the West Coast. During a busy salmon and halibut day, we can expect over 500 recreational boats going out of our jetties. This is a huge economic benefit to the Oregon coast and to the state of Oregon. The Port of Newport is also home port to the NOAA-MACP facility, OSU research vessels, and the future shipping at the International Terminal. The Oregon coast has cold waters even in the summer and fall. Persons in the water have less than the U.S. Coast Guard standard before they will be incapacitated due to symptoms from hypothermia. I'm going to quote a good friend of mine and also a commercial fisherman from Newport. He said, "We didn't get all of this new equipment so we could let us stay in the water longer." Newport is also one of the busiest areas of the state for beachgoers and recreationists, which we do stay at our marina and our RV park. The numbers are steadily growing, and these are the people that will make up and have made up one of the largest percentages of the rescues from the helicopters, and these numbers will only go up as the number of beachgoers increase. An added benefit is also to the rescue efforts for forest users and hikers. I would also like to take this time to also support and applaud the efforts of our local Coast Guard station in Quinta Bay and its crews. The Coast Guard helicopter is vital to all of those who ply our waters, ride our waves, and comb our beaches. I would ask you to wholeheartedly support House Joint Memorial 20 and send it to the President of the United States, Commandant of the Coast Guard, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Charlie Plybin. I'm the Oregon Policy Manager for Surfrider Foundation, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you guys today and our strong support for House Joint Memorial 20. I think there's a lot that's been said today, and I don't want to belabor your decision to support this memorial, so I will quickly just add a few words here. Surfrider Foundation is a nonprofit environmental organization dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of oceans, waves, and beaches, and as such, we represent many ocean recreational users. If you've been to the coast recently, you'll notice that the shape and the kinds of recreational activities on the ocean are vastly changing and quickly growing. It used to be just people in dory boats and the occasional surfer and a few people on the beach, but now we have stand-up paddle boards, we have windsurfers, we have kite surfers. We have all kinds of activities happening and growing at a rapid rate. So this was very concerning to us from a safety perspective when we learned about the Coast Guard closure in Newport. As a waterman myself, you probably can tell just from looking at me, this suit doesn't cover up everything. I spend a lot of time in the water, and I have a pretty good experience of what it means to be in the ocean. I also spend a lot of time in the water on the East Coast, and I know what it means to be in the water on the East Coast and in other areas of the country. I can say that I spent 25 years as a waterman on the East Coast, and when I moved to Oregon 15 years ago, I immediately knew that I had to remove that title. I knew nothing about the ocean, and frankly, I was pretty terrified of it. It's cold. The response times for individuals to get out of the water when they get in trouble is very, very fast. And waves, currents, all kinds of things are much more stronger and larger here on our coast than they are on the East Coast. Moreover, when we were presented with this decision from the Coast Guard, we were given these national statistics, these trends that were search and rescue is going down, and the needs for and the demands for search and rescue weren't as high as they used to be, and thus this was a responsible decision to make from a budgetary standpoint. We didn't buy into those studies and those models that they presented to us, and in fact, Surfrider Foundation took it upon ourselves to do a Freedom of Information Act request on the number of search and rescues that actually happen out of Newport and along the entire coast of Oregon. And looking at those stats, and I think some of that stuff has been distributed to you, members of the committee, you can tell that there are a stark number of increasing search and rescues that are happening along our coast, as can be demonstrated by everyone's testimony here about the growing uses along our coastline. So with that, I urge you to support House Joint Memorial 20, and I hope that this gets your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Any questions or comments for this panel? All right. With that, the only person we have left is Gabriella Goldfarb from the governor's office. Okay. And is there anybody else that hasn't spoken on this particular resolution? Fantastic.
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gabriella Goldfarb. I'm a natural resources policy advisor to Governor Kate Brown, and my portfolio includes ocean and coastal issues, so I work very closely with leaders on the coast, up and down the coast. I'm here today on behalf of Governor Brown to underscore the serious concerns expressed by our fishing community, the tourism and recreation interests, over the proposal by the U.S. Coast Guard to eliminate the search and rescue helicopter at the Newport Air Station. And everything you've heard today from all these really compelling witnesses and the joint memorial text itself really documents the vital life-saving role that this asset has provided for decades over and over again. As you've heard, in our frigid Pacific Northwest waters, lives will be lost because it will take too long to deploy from Coast Guard stations in Astoria or North Bend. And not only would the Central Coast communities be put at higher risk, but our entire coast. If the Newport helicopter is gone, then deployment from one or another end of the coast means that those communities, those sections of the coast, are left more vulnerable. And not only those areas of the coast, but Northern California and Southwest Washington. So I want to say that we really applaud Oregon's congressional delegation, along with you know, all the folks that you've heard from, they really came together and have worked tirelessly to secure funding for the one-year reprieve, as well as pursuing a legislative fix in the Coast Guard authorization, although more, as Jenny Gobler articulated, more is needed for the really long-term fix in terms of defining what is necessary on our coast to have a responsible policy for search and rescue. Above all, the governor wishes to really recognize and commend the work of local champions such as the Newport Fishermen's Wives, who were instrumental in getting a helicopter in Newport to begin with, and who sounded the alarm and have kept this on everyone's radar, together with the city of Newport, the port of Newport, Surfrider, many other local champions. So the governor appreciates this opportunity once again to add the state's voice to supporting this important cause, and we will continue to do so with Congress and with the Coast Guard until the helicopter's permanence in Newport is assured. Thanks very much for your time and attention. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Ms. Goldfarb? Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here, Ms. Goldfarb. Stating the obvious, I mean, we've all, including your testimony, put the lives at the top of the list. But the idea of replacing this is impossible, I would assume. But I just would like to hear that on the record. How in the world would we replace such a facility?
Asset. Yeah, there is no way, as you heard from the first responders at this table, the capabilities even of the water-based Coast Guard are limited, and of the shore-based marine response. You know, there's really only a helicopter can get in and pluck people out in, you know, that in-between spot in the most dangerous areas and the most exposed cliffs. So you need that asset, and supporting that asset is a huge financial and infrastructure undertaking. One, to delve into how the Coast Guard does this, that helicopter is actually supported out of North Bend. And the Coast Guard actually has five helicopters right now out of that area. One that's always deployed in Newport, one that's in the shop, and then, or maybe it's three, I can't remember what the number is, but then two that are available out of Coos Bay because we have such a large commercial fleet there. So it's really not just a matter of the Newport station with its one helicopter. It has a whole, you know, large infrastructure out of Coos Bay that supports that operation. So it's a big undertaking, and the state of Oregon does not have the expertise nor the assets to replace the function of the Coast Guard.
Thank you for that. One quick follow-up. Just to say that I believe we're going to see a unanimous vote on this bill, and I can't say that about a lot of bills in this committee, but I would say we would hope that this is helpful. I'm glad for those folks that have brought it forward, but as a tool for the governor to use in her leverage, and clearly she's key to us urging Congress, and we hope this helps, and I, for one, and I know my colleagues would be glad to do whatever else is necessary from our standpoint.
Very much, and it is important. The voice of the legislature united is extremely important to send that message, and that's the reason that I'm here today to encourage that. So thank you very much.
Any other comments? Thank you so much, and thank everybody for coming. I know anyone that's had to wait to find out whether your loved one is going to come home or wait for that call knows what that feels like. And for one life to be lost because people don't understand what our ocean is like just seems absolutely ridiculous. So thank you for your voices. Anything we can do, we certainly will add to that. With that, I will close. Oh, no, wait. Oh, we're in a work session. So I will accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move HJM 20 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Representative Smith-Warner has moved HJM 20 with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, the motion passes. And Representative Boone and Gomberg, would you like to co-carry this on the floor? Thank you. Close public hearing and work session on HJM 20.
And with that, I will open a work session on House Bill 3475, National Popular Vote. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3475 enacts Oregon's participation in interstate compact for election of U.S. President by national popular vote. This measure was originally heard on April 15th. It does come to you with a no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Okay. So we had testimony on this bill a few weeks ago. Seems like a lifetime ago. So with that, I would accept a motion so that we could have discussion on the measure.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3475 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Smith-Warner has moved House Bill 3475 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I find this a very interesting discussion and potentially a very interesting concept, but it's not a top tier of the issues that I'm working on this session, so I've received a rather thick book all about this, and I look forward to digesting that in the interim. So I'll be a no today, but again, a very interesting concept.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I received the book 2 years ago. I found it to be fascinating reading and containing a lot of history that I think any member would find useful. I was an opponent to this idea when I first heard it. I thought it was kind of unusual, to say the least. Having worked through it, it became clear to me that it is a significant improvement on the way we currently manage the elections for president and vice president, and that many of the problems that we have as a result of the current system simply go away when you use this approach, if we ever get to use this approach. And it has the wonderful attribute of not having to amend the federal constitution, but instead goes into effect when enough states adopt it so that its provisions will be controlling because of the electoral votes that it would then command. I think it's a very clever idea. I am very happy to support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am not prepared to support this. I agree with Representative Barnhart. It is an extremely interesting proposal, and it has jogged the historical memory of many of us. I will be a courtesy yes because of my ambivalence about passing it in the 2015 session.
Okay. Thank you. With that, is there any other discussion? Okay, with that, could Zoe, could you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
No.
Representative McLean.
He's excused.
Oh, he's excused.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner.
Aye.
Chair Hoyle.
Aye.
With that, the motion passes, and carriers will be Representative Reed and Davis. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3475 and open a work session on House Bill 3510, Purpose Statement. Erin, will you read the measure?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3510 requires legislative measures to contain brief and impartial statement of problem that the measure is intended to solve. It does exempt concurrent and single chamber resolutions and memorial from requirement. There's no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact when no statement was issued. This measure was originally heard in committee on April 20th with the chief sponsor here to testify and Representative Barreto.
So we had a hearing on this bill, so this is just a work session. So with that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3510 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved House Bill 3510 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
I have a question.
Sure.
This is set in the form of a statute. Yet the Constitution says that the legislature is to be controlled by its own rules. I wonder if in a form of a statute it can be effective. It's a query. It's not a. I don't have a conclusion about that. But it would seem to me that it would be much more appropriate for a measure like this to be inserted in the House rules rather than written as a statute because of the constitutional requirement that these kinds of matters, the generally matters, be controlled by the rules.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Aaron, do you have any comment on that, or is that's just a comment that's where you see that it would be?
I'm not at all certain that a law like this would be effective, that future legislatures would be required to obey it, because of the constitutional rule about that, and unless it's clear that I'm wrong about this, my suggestion is it be set over until we can determine from legislative council whether that's correct or not. And I would love to learn that I'm in error and that we actually can do this by statute.
Representative Rayfield.
I think there is an interesting question. I think there could be a procedural argument that this is more just procedure rather than requiring someone to do something. So just like on any part of the bill where we have to actually provide the bill with language, I see that more as a procedural element rather than something substantive that we're requiring a future legislator to do. So I don't see the, yeah, I mean, but it could be argued, like, in fairness. So.
What I would prefer to do, as we have told Representative Barreto that would be moving the bill, is look at this as it goes over to the Senate and ask them to address those concerns and go back to legislative council, if that's all right with you, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. And if I may, Madam Chair, I will be a courtesy yes today. And my vote on the floor may depend on what I think the answer to the question is.
That's totally fair. Thank you, and thank you for that. With that, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just also like to respond to Representative Barnhart's. I understand his concern. I will be interested because I am the chief sponsor of another bill that requires tax credit bills have a statement of purpose as well, with the goal being to make sure they correlate with the tax credit report that we passed a few years ago, requiring the Legislative Revenue Office to report as sunsets come up on tax credit bills, so that we can on the front end match up with what we're asking legislative revenue to do in the back end. And I feel as though that's a fairly similar request or requirement. So there are more than one bill like this that will hopefully be moving in this session.
Fantastic. Thank you. With that, I'd accept a motion. We have a motion on the floor. Sorry. Glad somebody's paying attention here. Yeah. We have a motion on the floor. With that, is there any more discussion? Is there any objection? If none, the motion passes, and I would like to sign Representative Barreto as the carrier and close a work session on House Bill 3475. Close the work session on 3510. And with that, we will open a work session on HJR 31 on impeachment. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HJR 31 proposes an amendment to Oregon Constitution to vest power of impeachment of statewide elected executive branch officials in House representatives and power to to try impeachment in the Senate requires 3/5 majority vote of House representatives to deliver impeachment resolution to Senate and 2/3 majority vote for Senate for conviction, limits judgment to removal from office and disqualification from holding other public office, refers proposed amendment to people for approval or rejection at next regular general election. There is a no revenue and a fiscal impact statement was issued. Just to the fiscal impact statement, the fiscal impact statement speaks to the cost of the ballot measure, which is indeterminate until they know how many measures will be on the ballot in 2016. So that is why the fiscal statement is before us today.
Okay. With that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move HJR 31 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved HJR 31 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes. Representative Gilling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With great respect for those who brought this forward, especially Representative Hack, because of their concern for a higher standard of ethical behavior in the state government. But with that respect, I again repeat what I've said before. This session is far too early to be acting exclusively on executive branch ethical questions, including impeachment, in my opinion. I will be a no.
Anyone else? Yes, Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to state for the record that I will also be a no on this because I believe that we have a system through our recall that deals with this situation. That's all.
Great. Thank you. So we have a yes, Representative Barnhart.
I want to note that this is not a resolution that I favor. I'm willing to give a courtesy yes to get it to the floor so it can be discussed there. But we have a system in place for recall in Oregon. I think this is properly drafted. I think it will accomplish the purpose that it was proposed for. I'm just not certain that Oregon needs another method for removing executive branch officials from office.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you bringing it forward today. When we went through the period of storminess that we did a couple of months ago, many people contacted me and were amazed that we didn't already have this process in place and felt that it would be a very effective thing for us to have in the quiver should we, God forbid, ever need it again. So anyway, I'll be a yes today. Thank you.
Thank you. And I Representative Wilson, I have to say that most of my constituents thought we already had it, and I'm well aware that we have recall provisions within our Constitution. I am keenly aware of that, and I will be supporting this as well. So with that, Zoe, will you call the yes?
No.
Zoe, sorry, will you call the roll?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Kenmer.
Aye.
Representative Singh.
Excused.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Rayfield.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
No.
Aye. And with that, the motion passes. I will co-carry this with Representative Hack and close the work session on HJR 31. And with all of our business done, are there any announcements?
Is there a possibility that I could vote on this bill?
Okay, which bill?
The 3483.
Yes, we can make a motion. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and that Representative Gilliam be allowed to vote on House Bill 3483. Is that it?
Yes.
Yes. Hearing no objection, Representative Gilliam, how would you like to vote on that bill, 3483?
No.
Okay, Representative Gilliam votes no. Let the record show. Is that
You're
it?
Welcome.
Okay, and with that, with no further business, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.
This meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.